Driving around our city on the Easter long weekend, I made a couple of trips across the recently opened Smithfield Bypass. Now, this is the $164 million road that bought us 3.8 kilometres. $164 million for 3.8 kilometres, and it's one lane. I find that bizarre. But anyway, it was meant to bust congestion, as the politicians like to say. It's been opened, it's had mixed reviews, but still, it got me thinking about road infrastructure. The other thing that got me thinking about road infrastructure, of course, is we're in the throes of a federal election campaign, and in the last 24 hours, the Labor Party announced $210 million to help fix the Kuranda Range Road. So just obviously road infrastructure, hundreds of millions of dollars almost every year, it seems. Billions of dollars spent across the nation. But it got me thinking about, do we need to think differently right now about road infrastructure given the predictions and the pace of change in autonomous vehicles, driverless cars? Where does that all play into the mix when governments are trying to decide what to do about roads? A man who... very, very keen to talk to about this topic. He is a professor in robotics. He's done a fairly landmark study a couple of years ago, which we'll touch on in our chat. His name's Professor Michael Milford. He's with Queensland University of Technology, QUT. Professor Milford, welcome to the King Review, first of all.
Hi, Gavin. Thanks for having me on.
Now, you heard my little intro there, driving around, just thinking about these billions of dollars that are spent right around the nation. I came across the study you did, I think it started in about 2018. I think Main Roads Department was involved there as well with you guys at QUT. It looked at this issue of road infrastructure and autonomous vehicles. Give us a quick summary of what that study was all about.
Sure. So it was with Queensland Department of Transport and Main Roads and a federal transport body called the iMove Cooperative Research Centre. We were trying to work out how ready the technologies you'll find on an autonomous vehicle are for game time once they're deployed on Australian roads with Australian signage and Australian roads structure, which is all a little bit different to what's experienced in, say, Europe and America.
And it was done in southeast Queensland. I think that vehicle travelled about 1,200 kilometres during that study and that research. What did you find?
It was a pretty fascinating experience, to be honest. There were really two key findings that were a little bit surprising. The first was that nothing really worked out of the box. Of course, there are signs that are unique to Australia or even unique to specific states in Australia. And these systems, which had been trained in Europe or America, they, of course, had no idea about these signs because they'd never seen them before. So that was the first surprise. The second key insight was that even once we'd trained these systems for Australian conditions and Australian infrastructure, so we taught the systems about these road signs that are unique to Australia, even then, out of the box, these systems weren't really performing at a sufficiently high level to really give you much confidence that they'd work well. And so what we found was that the magic ingredient to make them work really well was what we call high-definition maps, or HD maps for short. And the basic idea there is that the car is equipped already with this really detailed map of the city or the streets that it's driving around, and it can use that extra information to help it drive more safely and accurately.
You know, there must be so much going on behind the scenes to progress this technology. And as you said, that study, the diversity of signage. I mean, imagine, I can't wait for them to come to Far North Queensland and they see a road sign saying slow down because of casseries. I don't imagine a US or European vehicle will have any idea about that sign. But anyway, did it make you think that we are further away than perhaps some predictions are when it comes to driverless cars? Now, some reports that I've read, and, you know, it varies depending on which futurist you read, but, you know, some people say in 10 years' time, some people say it's much further, 20 or 30 years away, where perhaps we'll all be travelling around in driverless cars. Did the study make you think, well, there is a hell of a lot more work to do before we ever see this fully rolled out?
We knew it was a pretty difficult problem to solve. We have colleagues in all of these companies overseas, and they've told us how difficult it is. But seeing it for ourselves, first person in Australia, it really brought it home to us how many significant technical challenges still need to be perfected. In terms of predicting when this technology might be widespread on our roads, The good news is that 5, 6 years ago, a lot of people were predicting it would be there like next year even. Now people, I think, are a little bit more realistic. It hasn't happened as quickly as they initially thought. And yeah, very much what you said, they're thinking sort of 10 plus years for it to potentially be widespread. But that doesn't mean you won't see bits and pieces of it filtering out, sort of enhanced assistive driving systems, a bit of connected vehicles, which will help with safety. You'll see some sort of precursors to it in a shorter timescale, hopefully.
Now, I have an 11 and a 9-year-old and a fairly new baby at home. Will it be the case that my kids and certainly our grandkids won't have a driver's license?
I'm now old. I've got young kids of my own, and I'm thinking, no, they should get a driver's license regardless. Look, the safe option would be that they should definitely learn to drive. Even without autonomous vehicles, you can see the number of people getting driver's licenses seems to be slowing a little with ride-sharing services. But no, I'd definitely still recommend getting that skill set just in case.
Still getting that. And then I guess the final big question that I was pondering as I'm driving along this $164 million stretch of 3.8 kilometer road, governments must have a very, very challenging job, and the bureaucrats within these key departments, because on the one hand, you've got motorists jumping up and down, demanding, screaming about congestion. You know, you need to spend more money on widening roads and more lanes and fixing this and fixing that. But on the other, they must be going, surely, well, why are we spending $200 million here when, you know, again, who knows, 10, 20 years' time, should we be spending money now on accommodating what will be the future of autonomous vehicles? I mean, should governments be thinking and acting on this now in preparation for what's to come?
I have immense respect for the people we work with in government in this space because, yeah, they're trying to answer an impossibly difficult question, which is how long will it take for these technologies to really have an impact? I guess the key thing is to not invest lots of money in things that are speculative. So early on, I think people were thinking about dedicated roads and dedicated laneways for autonomous vehicles. And if you're having to spend billions of dollars to modify your city to make the technology work, that's generally speaking a really bad idea. And so while we can't say whether autonomous vehicles will be here in 5, 10, or 15 years, we can say that you probably shouldn't be investing large amounts of money changing your cities just to suit the technology.
Well, that means that they should just keep spending money, hundreds of millions of dollars for cars until we have more certainty about driverless cars.
Yeah, and the main companies driving the development of autonomous vehicles, they want these vehicles, this technology, to slot in effortlessly into the existing road networks. That's the big commercial value proposition. And so, yeah, if you don't make any substantial changes, the idea is that the autonomous vehicles will still be deployable in time.
Fantastic insights. Great to chat with you, Professor Michael Milford. Thanks for your time on the King Review today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.